permanently. And God knows what else, he thought. He pressed McClintock for permission to fly back to Cellini, but McClintock evaded the issue with a brittle smile and a vague, "Not yet. Soon, but not just right now." So Grant was pleasantly surprised one morning when McClintock woke him with a phone call. "Grant, there's a resupply lobber coming in later this morning. I want some of your people to help the crew offload its cargo, and then you ride back to Cellini with them." Sitting up in his wrinkled bed, Grant said eagerly, "I'll call Chris Cardenas. Tell her I'm coming." In the phone's small display screen, McClintock's face took on a pensive expression. "Yes, I suppose you might as well touch base with her while you're in Cellini. But the reason I want you there is to meet a Dr. Frederick Palmquist, who's visiting from Earth. He's asked for a tour of Farside." Frowning with puzzlement, Grant said, "There's nothing much here to show a visitor." Almost smirking, McClintock replied, "You know that, and I know that. But Professor Ulrich's in a sweat to get this fellow here and impress him. Woke me up at 5 this morning, all excited about Palmquist." "What's so damned exciting about the man?" "He's from Stockholm." "A Swede?" Then it hit Grant. "The Nobel Committee?" McClintock nodded solemnly. "It's nothing official. Palmquist isn't even on the committee. But Ulrich's in a lather. You'd think Jesus Christ and all 12 apostles were coming to town." Grant couldn't help grinning. "Yeah, I'll bet the ulcer is salivating. Like Pavlov's dogs." "Okay," Grant said, pulling his legs free of the tangled sheets. "What time's the lobber due to land?" "Between 10:30 and 11. I'll have a crew there, suited up and ready to help." As soon as McClintock hung up, Grant put in a call to Dr. Cardenas. It took more than an hour to unload the supplies that the lobber carried, mostly food, with some replacements for pieces of laboratory equipment. Grant worked with the lobber's crew and two of his regular Farside team. He was worming his arms out of his spacesuit, feeling tired and smelly, when he saw Trudy Yost step into the locker area. Surprised, Grant asked her, "What brings you down here?" She wrinkled her nose slightly, caught herself, and put on a smile instead. "Professor Ulrich wants me to go to Cellini to meet this Swedish visitor and bring him here." "That's what I'm supposed to be doing," Grant blurted. "The professor thought it would be best if an astronomer met the man." Leaning over to unfasten his boots, Grant muttered, "Instead of a lousy engineer, huh?" Trudy looked confused. "What do you mean?" "McClintock told me to go pick up the Swede."
"The professor told me," said Trudy.
Grant thought it over for all of 6 seconds. "Well, looks like we're both going."
"I don't think the professor would want both of us to go."
Standing up in his thick stockinged feet, Grant said, "McClintock told me to go. Nobody's told me not to."
"But the professor..."
Trudy's voice tailed off. With a shake of his head, Grant said, "McClintock and the ulcer screwed up. The left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing."
"I'll phone Professor Ulrich," Trudy said.
"No," Grant snapped. "We'll both go." "Why not?"
"Because the professor will pop his cork when he finds out, that's why not."
"Let him," said Grant. "He can argue it out with McClintock. In the meantime, you and I can go visit Cellini together." Trudy looked apprehensive, but slowly a mischievous grin dimpled her cheeks. At last she said,
"Sounds good to me."
Then she added,
"But there'll be hell to pay when we get back."
"We'll be bringing the Swede with us. The ulcer won't dare show his temper in front of him. Besides," Grant thought, "I'll get my chance to see Cardenas and get injected with her nanomachines while Trudy's making nice-nice to our Swedish visitor." Dr. Frederick Palmquist. Grant and Trudy were the only passengers aboard the lobber on its return flight to Cellini. The vehicle was configured for carrying cargo, not passengers, so they sat in a pair of fold-out seats up in the cramped cockpit, shoehorned in behind the pilot and co-pilot. Grant saw that once they had lifted off, the pilots had nothing to do during the 45-minute flight except watch the control panel instruments. The ballistic flight followed Newton's laws faithfully. Then he noticed that Trudy looked, not frightened exactly, but concerned, almost worried, her face a little taut. "It's okay," he said, trying to reassure her. "Everything's going smoothly." Trudy looked startled.
"I know. I just feel kind of like a sardine, cooped up in here.
It's not first-class accommodations, that's for sure, he admitted.
Can't see the ground at all.
Pointing between the pilot's shoulders, Grant said, We'll see it on their display screen when we start to descend. Trudy nodded uncertainly. The flight's on trajectory, Grant said. No worries.
With a smile that looked forced, Trudy said, Flyers claim that flying is the second most exciting thing a man can do.
And what's the first most exciting, sex?
No, she said, her expression quite serious. The first most exciting thing a man can do is landing.
She is worried, Grant realized. He wondered what he could say to make her feel better. It'll be okay. Don't worry about it. Grant thought it sounded pretty lame, but Trudy smiled again at him. It was a pretty smile, he thought. The Lobber's landing was fully automated, although the two pilots hunched over their instruments, ready to assume manual control if necessary, as the rocket plummeted towards Cellini's blast-blackened landing pads. Despite his reassurances, Grant felt a wave of relief once they touched down. He grinned at Trudy.
Piece of cake.
Sure, she said.
Now?
As soon as they cleared the debarkation desk and got aboard one of the automated trams that ran through the kilometer-long tunnel to Cellini proper, Grant phoned Dr. Palmquist. The Swede was in a tour bus taking in the tourist sights out on the floor of Alphonsus's broad-ringed plane.
We are approaching the Ranger 9 site, Palmquist said in English, slightly accented with a reedy Swedish intonation.
The phone's reception was weak in the tunnel, its video image grainy. In the miniature screen, Palmquist looked to Grant like bleached white flour. His thinning, dead white hair was combed straight back from his high forehead. His complexion was pale, his face roundish. Grant nodded and asked, When is your tour scheduled to return?
Palmquist's pallid face took on a slightly puzzled expression.
They told me it was a 3-hour tour, he replied. And we left promptly at 11 o'clock.
So you'll be back at 1400, Grant prompted.
I suppose so, Palmquist said, looking uncertain about it.
We'll meet you when your bus arrives.
Fine. Very good. We can have tea together.
Grant suppressed a chuckle. We'll go to the cafeteria.
Good, said Palmquist.
Clicking his pocket phone shut, Grant turned to Trudy, sitting beside him on the tram. He thinks he's still in Stockholm. Tea in the afternoon. She shrugged.
We can do a tea, I bet you. The cafeteria's got cookies and buns. We'll make do.
Glancing at his wristwatch, Grant said, I've got to see Dr. Cardenas.
Fine, said Trudy. I'll go over to the university and chat up the people in the astronomy department, see what they're up to.
The tram stopped at the end of the tunnel, and Trudy agreed to meet Grant at the main garage where the tour buses came in a few minutes before 1400 hours. Then she started off for the university's underground classrooms and offices. Grant headed straight for the nanotechnology lab. Chris Cardenas was in a pensive mood when Grant reached her desk.
You realize what you're letting yourself in for, don't you?
She asked Grant as soon as he settled himself in the chair by her desk.
Letting myself in for? He asked.
Once people know you've ingested nanomachines, they'll treat you differently. They'll be wary of you, scared even.
Not here, Grant scoffed.
We use nanomachines all the time.
People are still scared of them.
You think so? Cardenas's bright blue eyes fixed Grant with a hard stare.
Take it from me. I've gone through it. I lost a lot of friends once they realized my body's full of nanos.
Grant puffed out a little grunt. I don't have that many friends.
You'll have fewer once they know. You'll become a pariah.
Even at Farside?
Even at Farside, Cardenas said, utterly serious.
Grant thought about it for a few silent moments, then said, Maybe it'd be better if nobody knew about it then.
She pursed her lips, then murmured, I think you're right. Keep it to yourself.
Nodding, Grant said, Okay, that's what I'll do.
It's nobody else's business, really.
Yeah, I suppose so. Cardenas brightened slightly and pulled a desk drawer open. She picked a small plastic vial out of it.
Here's your first dose, she handed the vial to Grant.
He held it up and peered at it. Looks like orange juice.
That's what it is, orange juice, with a few million nanomachines suspended in it.
That many?
They're programmed to the blood sample you gave me, You drink them down, and they'll start repairing your